Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 15, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, text number 1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Ordvamalamadakshakam Ashvatam Prahur Abhyayam Shidam Siyasya Parnani Yastam Vena Savedavit Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Ordva Mulam, with the roots above, Adaha, downward, Shakam, branches, Ashvatam, a banyan tree, Prahu, is said, Avyayam, eternal, Chandamsi, the Vedic hymns, Yasya, of which, Parnani, the leaves, Ya, anyone who, Tam, that Veda knows, Saha, he, Vedavit, the knower of the Vedas. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. Please repeat. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, you don't seem very convinced. Let's try that again. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada's purport. After the discussion of the importance of bhakti yoga, one may question, what about the Vedas? It is explained in this chapter that the purpose of the Vedic study is to understand Krishna. Therefore, one who is in Krishna consciousness, who is engaged in devotional service, already knows the Vedas. The entanglement of this material world is compared here to a banyan tree. One who is engaged in fruitive activities, there is no end to the banyan tree. He wanders from one branch to another, to another, to another. The tree of this mature world has no end. And for one who is attached to this tree, there is no possibility of liberation. The Vedic hymns meant for elevating oneself are called the leaves of this tree. This tree's roots grow upward because they begin from where Brahma is located, the topmost planet of this universe. If one can understand this indestructible tree of illusion, then one can get out of it. This process of extrication should be understood. In the previous chapters, it has been explained that there are many processes by which to get out of the material entanglement. And up to the 13th chapter, we have seen that devotional service of the Supreme Lord is the best way. Now, the basic principle of devotional service is detachment from material activities and attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord. The process of breaking attachment to the material world is discussed in the beginning of this chapter. The root of this material existence grows upward. This means that it begins from the total material substance, from the topmost planet of the universe. From there, the whole universe is expanded with so many branches, representing the various planetary systems. The fruits represent the results of the living entity's activities, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Now, there is no ready experience in this world of a tree situated with its branches down and its roots upward, but there is such a thing. That tree can be found beside a reservoir of water. We can see that the trees on the bank reflect upon the water with their branches down and roots up. In other words, the tree of this material world is only a reflection of the real tree of the spiritual world. This reflection of the spiritual world is situated on desire, just as a tree's reflection is situated on water. Desire is the cause of things being situated in this reflected material light. One who wants to get out of this material existence must know this tree thoroughly through analytical study. Then he can cut off his relationship with it. This tree, being the reflection of the real tree, is an exact replica. Everything is there in the spiritual world. The impersonalists take Brahman to be the root of the material tree, and from the root, according to Sankhya philosophy, come Prakriti, Purusha, then the three gunas, then the five gross elements, Pancha Maha Bhuta, then the ten senses, Dasendriya, mind, etc. In this way, they divide up the whole material world into 24 elements. If Brahman is the center of all manifestations, then this material world is a manifestation of the center by 180 degrees. And the other 180 degrees constitute the spiritual world. Material world is the perverted reflection, so the spiritual world must have the same variegatedness, but in reality. The Prakriti is the external energy of the Supreme Lord, and the Purusha is the Supreme Lord himself, and that is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Since this manifestation is material, it is temporary. A reflection is temporary, for it is sometimes seen and sometimes not seen. But the origin from whence the reflection is reflected is eternal. The material reflection of the real tree has to be cut off. Then it is said that a person knows the Vedas. It is assumed that he knows how to cut off attachment to this material world. If one knows that process, he actually knows the Vedas. One who is attracted by the ritualistic formulas of the Vedas is attracted by the beautiful green leaves of the tree. He does not exactly know the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is disclosed by the personality of God himself, is to cut down this reflected tree and attain the real tree of the spiritual world. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Ordvam Alam Madakshakam Ashvatam Prahur Avyayam Jadam Siyasya Parnani Yes, Tvam Veda, Savedavit. Supreme Personality of God had said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree knows the Vedas. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't mention very much about the Vedas, but for instance, in the second chapter, Krishna says, Yamimam pushpitam vacham, pravadant yavipasita, vedavatarata partha, nainyam astiti vadinam, karmatvakam swagapura, janmakaram pralapradam, kriya visheshu baulam, bhagaishvayakatim pratim. That men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery languages of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resulting good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there's nothing more than this. In other words, the Vedas are meant to gradually encourage us to sacrifice our material energy to obtain something higher. In order to get people to regulate their activities some reward is promised. For instance, in the Vedas, they tell you that if you want to eat a goat, then you should go up to a mountain or a hill on a dark moon night when there's no moon, and you should whisper in the goat's ear, "My dear goat, now I'm going to cut your throat. But don't worry, because soon or in the future I'll become a goat and you can cut my throat." So if you do that enough times, then you lose your taste for goat burgers, thinking that this goat burger doesn't taste that good, that I want to become a goat in my next lifetime or in some future life, and I'm going to have my throat cut and become a goat burger. So the Vedas offer results for following their instructions only so far as it encourages people to become obedient. As I said the other day, it's just like a child. When you want him to take medicine, you offer him some reward. If you take the medicine, then I'll give you a lollipop. But after he takes the medicine, he says, "Where's the lollipop?" "Oh, lollipops are very expensive. Don't have a lollipop. Maybe tomorrow." So the Vedas offer it, but they actually give results. If you follow the Vedas, you can actually get some result, but you have to do the sacrifice. And by doing the sacrifice, hopefully, gradually you regulate your activities so you lose the taste for the result. Because after all, material nature is only a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements in different ways. Although it looks promising, but basically speaking, punak punas charvita charvananam, it's always giving us the same result. But Krishna consciousness, on the other hand, is nitya nava 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 yovana. It's always fresh. And so if one can come to the platform of Krishna consciousness as a result of following the Vedic literature, as a result of following Krishna, if one becomes subservient to Krishna, and then Krishna reveals himself, then one gets the higher taste, and then one becomes detached from all the allurements of the Vedas. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam, there are so many stories about the heavenly planets. There are so many stories about people who got the results of the Vedas, got great opulence, got great fame, etc. As a matter of fact, at the end of the Bhagavatam, often it says, if you read this chapter of the Bhagavatam, you'll defeat all your enemies. So, okay. It's finished. I'm finished with the chapter and you're finished. So people are encouraged to read the Bhagavatam and read the Bhagavatam. And at the end they say, well, okay. Maybe let my enemy live for another couple of days. One becomes a little purified. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, he followed Narada Muni's advice because he wanted to get a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather. So he went great austerity. I think the first month he only ate leaves that fell from the tree. No, he only ate kapita fruit once every third day. And there Prabhupada said that kapita fruit is not very good fruit. It's only the monkeys eat it. And another place Prabhupada writes that kapita fruit is very tasty fruit. So I don't know. Did you ever have kapita fruit? So I don't know. Did you ever see a kapita fruit? I've never seen a kapita. I don't even know what a kapita fruit. Anyhow, somehow or another, he only ate a little fruit every third day. And then for the second month, he only drank a little water every sixth day. And then for the third month, he only ate leaves that fell from the tree. Luckily, it was autumn, so there were some leaves falling down. every ninth day. And then for the next month, he only took a breath of air every 12th day. Maybe on Sunday he took a couple of an extra for the feast. Took two breaths of air. And then for the next month, he stopped breathing and stood on one leg. So that's quite austere. I mean, that's quite detached. And then finally he got the vision of Lord Vishnu, Prishnigarbha, Vishnu. And he was so ecstatic when he saw Vishnu that he didn't want anything. He said, I was looking for some broken pieces of glass, but now I found a diamond like you. Still, Lord Vishnu gave him a planet called Dhruvaloka, which you can see, it's the pole star. And it's effulgent. And he still lives there if you want to go and meet him. Just go through the austerity. There's a place called Dhruvagat. You can go there and maybe we can find some kapita fruit for you. In 6 months, you can also meet Lord Vishnu. Because when you get up to the month where you only eat dry leaves every 12th day, hopefully you do it during the fall. Otherwise, you might go hungry. And hopefully it's a nice fresh day, so when you take your one breath of air every 15th day, it's a good amount of air you take in, so you don't get too hungry. So these austerities are not possible in this age to do because they're just too austere. As a matter of fact, even chanting Hare Krishna for us is sometimes a little austere. Still, if one is able to simultaneously perform austerity and then chant Hare Krishna, then one can actually become detached from material energy. Because the idea is that if we're properly austere, proper austerity means we eat prasadam, we hear about Krishna and the association of devotees. So that's probably the greatest austerity, is learning how to get along with the other devotees. That's the greatest austerity. Because, you know, if we don't like the food, we just don't eat it. If we don't like the devotee, we can't throw him out of the temple. Even if we want to. Somehow or another, to learn tolerance in the association of devotees is a great austerity. What to speak of appreciation? To appreciate someone by nature you may not appreciate or may not even like is a great austerity. But that's Krishna consciousness. And if one can come to that platform, like Ambarish Maharaj is always the example, or what to speak of Ambarish Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was tortured by his father. And what did Prahlad Maharaj, finally when Lord Nrisimhadev asked him for what kind of benediction do you want? He said, I want that my father become liberated. Imagine someone torturing you for some time and then finally Krishna shows up and says, I've saved you. How can I serve you? What can I do for you? Please help my enemy. That's pretty austere. Not that finally you came, take my enemy and send him to the darkest regions of existence and let him never come back again. Then I'll feel good. So that's the opposite of devotee. The devotee is kind to everyone, even to their enemy, because they know that even their enemy is actually sent by Krishna to help them advance in pure devotional service. Because unless Aranyakashipu was torturing Prahlad, Prahlad would never have made it into the Bhagavatam. So now Prahlad Maharaj is eternally in the Bhagavatam, at least in our Bhagavatam. So this is all due to Hiranyakashipu. Because most of us, that type of friend we don't really need. We wouldn't really care if we made it into the Bhagavatam. But anyhow, Hiranyakashipu was also an eternal servant of Krishna, coming from the spiritual world, and he had a mission, and Prahlad Maharaj was part of that mission, and Hiranyakashipu helped glorify Prahlad Maharaj. So when a devotee is put into difficulty, and he's able to tolerate that difficulty, and go on with his Krishna consciousness, then he becomes the most glorified. So, in the material world, everyone wants a comfortable position, everyone wants happy, everyone wants peaceful life. And in the Bhagavatam, all of Krishna's devotees, I don't think any of them ever had a peaceful life. It's just one problem after another. Whether it's even the Pandavas, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, everyone had to go through some problems, but at the end when they got Krishna, it was all worth it. And here in the material world, everyone is going through problems, and when they get the result, whatever it is, ultimately they get tired of it. And then they lose it. And then they lament. They're never satisfied. And at the end, they're still unhappy. If you get all the money and all the fame and everything else in the material world that everyone is looking for, then if ultimately one has to lose it, and when one loses it, that's more painful than if you didn't have it. If at the time of leaving your body you don't have anything, there's nothing to lament about. But if you worked your whole life, you accumulated a fortune, you got great fame and power and everything, and then finally when you got everything, you lost it. Then it's quite disturbing. Therefore, in the material world, although everyone is looking for material advancement, but actually material advancement is not really necessarily such a great benediction. Because at the end of life, if one is attached to such things, then one has to come back and get the result of that attachment. Therefore, even the big, great kings in the Vedic culture, at the end of life, they renounced it and went into the forest. Because here we also go into the forest, Timberley Park. But that's not because we're great kings. Nor do we stay there. Could you imagine having to live in Timberley Park? Tivoli Park, is that it? What's the name of the park? Tivoli Park. Imagine having to live there now. You say, well, I think my devotional service is advanced enough. I think I'm going to live in Tivoli Park. And only eat the leaves from the trees there. Every third day. And the only thing I'll take with me is my japa beads. And I'll do at least 16 rounds a day. No, we couldn't possibly do that. Still, we don't have to do that. We can stay in the temple. We can eat nice prasadam. We can chant Hare Krishna. We just have to be nice to each other, that's all. Maybe it's easier to go to Tivoli Park. In any case, Krishna will help. So I think I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Moment of silence. Okay. Kuala Granthraj Mahabhagavad Gita Kijai.